Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Recognize that? Just in time for Halloween. The shower scene that changed everything in American horror cinema. Alfred Hitchcock's 1960 movie Psycho was one of the first horror films to introduce American audiences to the deranged serial killer and to ask the question, could a murderer be lurking in us all? Coming on the heels of a post-war atomic age, where many horror movies had to do with out-of-control science experiments, think Godzilla, think Frankenstein, Psycho, as my next guest puts it, ushered in an era where the monstrous had nothing to do with supernatural elements or technological disasters, but sprang instead from some internal corruption. Asia Romano is an internet culture reporter for Vox, and in this week, leading up to Halloween, her new piece is called The Horror Century. The scariest movies have always been a dark mirror on Americans' deepest fears and anxieties. Asia, thank you so much for joining us for this.
Thanks for having me.
And listeners, we will play a couple of other classic movie clips as we go here. But kind of the basic relationship we have to horror movies is something maybe we could start with. Because some people turn to horror movies for comfort when they're stressed with actual life. Other people like me think that's weird and just get more disturbed by them. So did you watch a lot of horror during the pandemic? And if so, what did you find yourself drawn to?
Absolutely, I did. I think this idea that there's something kind of validating about horror, you know, that you can see all of your anxieties and all of the your subconscious worries and things that you're repressing sort of play out on screen. I think that the idea that that can be cathartic to many people is true for, and I think that's probably why I think horror in the pandemic has been really popular. And of course, we've been having this golden era of horror in general, but I have especially been drawn to kind of quiet horror recently. There's a film from New Zealand that I really enjoy called Housebound, where this girl is on house arrest and she is basically stuck with her mom and she's having all these issues, you know, just normal family issues while she's in house arrest. And she's this irascible 20-something who doesn't know what she wants in life, but then she realizes that there's somebody in the house with them. And so she can't leave because she's on house arrest. And I think that movie's just, like, it's so witty and dry, and it just kind of encapsulates this feeling of being trapped, stuck in this in this one location, you know, like we've been in quarantine for many of us during pandemic, right? And so I think that there are moments like that when a film can really resonate with you on both like a literal and an allegorical level.
So listeners, you can be part of this too. Did you find yourself turning to horror during the pandemic? And what was your favorite horror film that you watched in the last year and a half or so? And why? 212-433-WNYC, horror movie fans this Halloween week, 212-433-9692. Have horror films been a comfort for you of any kind during the pandemic era in particular? If so, what movies? 212-433-9692 for Asia Romano, internet culture reporter for Vox. So the premise of your piece, before we play a few more clips, is that horror movies and what makes them scary, the monster, the threat, is often linked to the cultural anxieties and fears of that very moment in society, a dark mirror, as you call it. And you write, the first horror movie is widely accepted to be 1921's The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari. That's 100 years ago, 1921. Happy birthday, horror. So what were some themes that dominated that movie and then in those first few decades of the genre?
I think that movie is really unique. It's well known for being an expression of German expressionism and for having almost this like surrealist quality in the set design and getting at sort of the psychosis of dreams and really plumbing the depths of the psyche and looking internally for sort of the source of the monstrous within us, right? And that's a theme that we see playing out throughout that era. You know, you have these like the universal monster movies of the 30s and 40s, things like The Mummy and The Wolfman and Dracula, right? And I think that whole era really was kind of grappling with this undercurrent of unease following World War I and preceding World War II, where you had this idea that the old world was collapsing and giving rise to the new world. But there was all this sort of, you know, clash of modernity and tradition and individualism with communality and all of these things that kind of culminated in this exploration that I think we see playing out in horror films of the period, that's asking, you know, who is the other in this situation? What if I am the monster? What if I am the person who's not able to fit in properly into this new society, right? And so I think we see various kinds of extrapolations and layers of upon layers of those ideas in horror over the next decade or so.
Let's play a clip from 1954's Creature from the Black Lagoon, a movie you say dealt directly with post-war anxiety. A group of scientists has just discovered a large amphibious hand while on an expedition in the Amazon. Listen.
Could it possibly belong to a Pleistocene man?
The chances are much greater that that hand belonged to an amphibian, Mark. One that spent a great deal of time in the water.
Well, then how do you account for the structure of the fingers? Obviously for land use.
We can be sure of one thing. Whatever it was very powerful.
Whatever it was very powerful in 1954's Creature from the Black Lagoon. How do you place this movie in your piece, Asia?
I see it as kind of a transition from, you know, the Universal era where you had these very concrete monsters, right? Into sort of the post-war era of the 50s and 60s where you had larger themes popping up about, you know, what is humanity's responsibility to, you know, the environment, to these places like the Amazon that they explore in Creature from the Black Lagoon, and to like the creatures
there,
right?
The Creature from the Black Lagoon was really Chevron. Never mind. I'm just still thinking about our last segment. Go ahead.
But that's actually like a really good way to process this, because you're talking about this era where all of our anxieties were suddenly about human overreach in the wake of the atomic bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, right? Mm-hmm. You had people really starting to ask, what if we're going too far? And I think Creature from the Black Lagoon is sort of one of those touchstone films that really sort of approaches this idea that maybe humans shouldn't be going into the forest and being trying to do anthropology in these places where they're not meant to be, right? And of course, we then see sort of these new monsters or variants of old monsters like Godzilla, who I sort of described as like a post-nuclear dragon. With all of the incumbent anxiety that he contains about World War and the atomic era and apocalypse.
We're going to play a clip from a 1968 horror film in just a second as we continue to go forward in history in the genre. But let's hear from some of our callers. Our lines are absolutely packed with people wanting to say what horror films they've turned to themselves during the pandemic. And we'll start with Debbie in Branchville. You're on WNYC. Hi, Debbie.
Hi, Brian. Well, that's one of my favorite genres, but I really, really love horror films with intelligent plots and dialogue. And I just recently binge-watched the entire series of Midnight Mass, which stars Hamish Linklater and Henry Thomas, who's all grown up since he played Elliot in E.T. And it's kind of a combination. It's almost as if a serious version of Dogma meets Salem's Lot, because it does deal with issues. There are something like a vampire in it, but it's really more about the existential crisis that people think about life. And it deals specifically with Catholicism and the Muslim religion. And there are some really powerful monologues by different characters talking about these. So as horrific as it is, and it is very gruesome, but it's also inspirational. And it's one of the first horror films where I've heard them singing Nearer My God to Thee, they did on the Titanic before it sank.
Really,
and it's really worth watching.
Debbie, thank you very much for that. Appreciate it. Aaron, in the city, you're on WNYC. Hi, Aaron.
Oh, is this me?
Yes. Yes.
Hi, Brian. I'm actually calling. This is super relevant to me because at the very start of the pandemic, a group of friends, we were all in different places, and we were all very stressed, of course. So we decided to start a virtual movie night over Zoom. So every week, they're all horror movies. We would all vote on a movie. We'd have a little bit of a chat beforehand, then we'd mute ourselves, use the chat box, and talk during the movie. And we had one friend who was not a horror movie fan at all, and she's basically become an expert at this point, and we're probably up to 50 movies
wow.
at this point.
Well, give us the kind of internal dialogue that you feel you're experiencing when you watch some of these 50 horror movies during the pandemic. What are you getting from it in a sort of release your pandemic anxiety sense?
Yeah, I mean, in a lot of ways, it was almost cathartic because you would watch people, and a lot of the time we would have a phrase, we'd be like, okay, it's bad decision time, because you would see someone, like a movie like Jaws, for instance, that was one we watched, and we all found it was very relevant to what was happening when people were like, oh, don't go in the water, and then the beach official or whoever was saying, oh, no, it's totally fine, it's, you know, go ahead in there, and we were just like, wow, this is very relevant to what's happening right now with, you know, downplaying the pandemic and all that sort of thing. So it's it became almost a way of a therapeutic kind of an activity.
Erin, thank you so much for that. Good luck with Movie 51. Lynn in Bloomfield, you're on WNYC. Hi, Lynn.
Hello. Let me take you off speaker. Hi. When the pandemic first started, I said into my remote, zombie movies, and something came up that was it's called Cell with Samuel L. Jackson and John Cusack. Who knew Samuel L. Jackson made a zombie movie?
And was it relevant to go ahead?
Well, it's a zombie movie, so it's horror, and what was amazing about it is that within like the first 3 minutes the zombies start attacking, which usually there's more of a prologue, you know, there's more of a send-up than that. And the other one that everything is really cool for everybody to watch is Pride and Prejudice and Zombies.
Huh. Lynn, thank you very much. All right, let's do one more. Mark in Ponce, Puerto Rico. Hi, Mark, you're on WNYC.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for picking up.
What you got?
So last night I was watching CNN, and I looked over to TCM, saw that Them was playing, you know, all caps, T-H-E-M with an exclamation point. And I just had to rewatch it. I've watched it a million times, and I was just impressed with how much people trusted scientists and law enforcement in the given the context we're in now.
So Them was, you know, better people, than watching the horror of the news on Wolf Blitzer.
Definitely than watching The Situation Room with Wolf Blitzer. That's one of the most overproduced shows. Truly horrifying.
Mark, thank you very much. What are you thinking listening to those callers, Asia?
I mean, I think they're getting at exactly what is so gratifying about horror in the pandemic age or in any age, because I think they're calling out these themes that speak to them on an allegorical level, but also like a very literal level. You know, this idea that, you know, Them is all about it was produced in a time where we really valued science as being the ultimate sort of guiding authority to really help us through times of chaos and these like apocalyptic post-nuclear meltdowns that were happening all over horror and sci-fi films, right? And when you look back now, you see, you know, how relevant that is to today, and also how maybe naive we were back then. And, you know, the idea that Jaws really, in the plot of Jaws is basically the shark versus this town's entire economy, right? And the things that they will do to preserve their sense of stability in the face of this unpredictable man-eater that has come to their town, right? Really, really, really does mirror in many ways the reaction to the pandemic. And
yeah.
So I think people seeing themselves in this situation in those films are exactly what horror is about.
The virus is the monster, and then how do human beings react to it? And we've been living that drama for a year and a half plus. We have a few more minutes with Asia Romano, culture critic for Vox, who has a great piece about how horror movies over time have expressed the anxieties of the time and reflected them. And let's take one more example from more than 50 years ago, 1968, in a section that you call Cultural Meltdown, Psychosexuality and the Occult. And listeners, let's see if you can place this movie's ending scene.
What have you done to him, you maniac?
Say
Satan is his father, not Guy. He came up from hell and begat a son of mortal woman.
Hail Satan!
Hail Satan!
Wow. Yes, that was Rosemary's Baby, 1968. And, like, on the one hand, it's a complete and total metaphor for the way that women were not in control of their bodies. And then in the last 5 seconds, it loses the metaphor and becomes sort of goofy and actually about Satan. So if you want this movie to be about the patriarchy, it's about the patriarchy. If you want it to be about satanic rituals and sacrifice, it's also about that. Would you say those two themes were circulating widely in 1968?
I definitely think they were in the water. Obviously, there was an entire feminist movement in the 60s and 70s that, and even if you look back at Rosemary's Baby itself, you know, Mia Farrow's haircut was sort of this iconic symbol of women's liberation, you know? And I think all those themes are obviously there in Rosemary's Baby, but you also have this kind of burgeoning resentment over the counterculture. And, you know, you have things like the Manson family gaining traction in the cultural subconscious and really kind of preparing us for like the 70s and the ultimate satanic panic of the 80s, you know? And I think films like this obviously they're so good and they're so powerful, but they also, in a very literal way, you know, films like Rosemary's Baby and The Exorcist gave people kind of permission to believe in Satan and the devil and all sorts of occult panic and hysteria.
And one more from 2017. Listeners, a lot of you will get this one from the context.
They're probably abducting black people, brainwashing them, and making them slaves or sex slaves, not just regular slaves. See, I don't know if it's the hypnosis that's making them slaves or whatnot, but all I know is they already got two brothers we know, and it could be a whole bunch of brothers they got already.
That's the character Rod, for those of you who didn't see Get Out, which made this idea we're talking about very explicit, you know, like the Stepford Wives before it in the 70s, dealing with women's liberation. It took cultural anxieties about race and turned them up to 11. Jordan Peele calls Get Out social horror. Just give me 30 seconds on this and we're out of time.
Oh, it's such a brilliant meta exploration of not only the situation that black people are in contemporary America, but horror itself and what horror is supposed to do. Because the whole plot runs on this sort of conceit that normally in a horror film, the protagonist of a horror film is safe when they go into, you know, upper class, middle, you know, New England in the middle of nowhere, surrounded by rich white people in their rich white people houses, right? But in this case, the protagonist is a black man, and that completely upends everything you know about horror and everything you know about horror tropes. And it allows people to conduct this brilliant exploration of the audience's expectations for horror.
And there we leave it as we return to music from Psycho, where we began on this Halloween week, with Asia Romano, internet cultural reporter for Vox. Great article. Thanks for sharing it with us.
Thanks for having me.